When Ernie Crow mentioned absent-minded professors, he made me think about what happened to me last Sunday in Dallas. And I know some of you would enjoy hearing it, so I will tell you. On Saturday night, I did two lectures separated by a coffee break in which we examined very carefully the two creation stories in Genesis. And then on Sunday morning early before the worship service, we examined the sacred confusion of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John about exactly what happened on the morning of the resurrection. We used nothing but the text. It was a kind of intense analysis, but we used only the text. So I was a little surprised when I walked down the aisle of the church toward the front to prepare to preach that morning, only to come up behind my host, Dr. Paul McGee, who was being engaged in conversation by a woman about 4'6", I guess, 80-some years old, whose name was Muggy or Buffy or Puggy or something like this, and who was talking very energetically to my beloved friend Paul and said this, not knowing I had come up behind her. She said, "I don't know who that man was, that fellow that you had here today. I don't know where he came from, but," she said, "don't ever let him come back here again." My friend Paul, who was responsible for my being there, said, "Why?" He said, "Because he doesn't know anything about the Bible." So I decided this morning that instead of being controversial or academic or lecturing or whatever, I would do a very simple, basic kind of gospel message. Here it is. If one of the parables told by Jesus were put into modern speech, it might sound like this. A man from the city drives out to visit a sheep ranch. As they stroll in the pasture, he and the rancher who has been looking around constantly, even while they talk, says suddenly, "Uh-oh, I've got one missing." "How does that happen?" the city man asks. "Oh, they just nibble themselves lost. They keep their heads down, grazing from one spot to another that they think is better, come to a hole in the fence, and then never find the way by which they can get back in." The city man thinks about himself and some of his friends and mutters under his breath, "Just like people." Now for the parable the way Jesus told it. On a certain day, some tax collectors from the hated Roman army of occupation, along with a few other despised characters, were crowding around to listen to Christ, when some of the pious people from the downtown church began to grumble at the sight. "Look at that. The so-called prophet welcoming reprobates to his lectures and even going down to the deli to eat with them afterwards. Some prophet, if he can't figure out what a bunch of losers he's hanging around with." Jesus heard them, probably because they meant him to hear them, So he told them twin stories about how people and things get lost, how persistently someone looks for them, and what a great joy there is when they're found. His way of describing how it is with all of us in the sight of God. If one of you, he said, has 100 sheep and loses one of them, doesn't he leave the 99 in the open pasture and go after the missing one until it's found? And how delighted he is when that happens. He lifts it onto his shoulders and goes home to call his friends and neighbors and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." So maybe that stretches it a little bit. Maybe there weren't really that many parties held in honor of the recovery of one dumb and disheveled sheep. But Jesus loved hyperbole, and they got the point. Or suppose, he says, a woman who has 10 silver coins loses one of them. What does she do? She lights a lamp, sweeps her house, and looks carefully everywhere until she finds it. And then she says to her neighbors, "Let's celebrate." That's how God rejoices when one is found who was lost. Now, Jesus never uses overkill, the besetting sin of so many pulpits. So he doesn't come right out and say this, but the implicit message is hanging in the air. By your own teaching, gentlemen, these people I'm with are lost. Surely a lost person is more important and calls for more urgent and risky search than a lost sheep or a lost coin. The truth is, I represent the nature of God Himself, who never gives up trying to find and rescue people like these. The twin stories show two common ways of being lost. I grew up hearing sermons that made it sound as if the lost were a malevolent group of deliberate sinners who loved to flaunt their rebellion in the face of God. But that isn't how Jesus talks in these two parables. He describes two ways of being lost, neither one of them intentional. The sheep is not a black sheep. It's just an ordinary part of the flock that does what some of us do. It grazes along from this passing pleasure to that supposed enrichment until all of a sudden it looks up at last. There's darkness falling, and it catches on that it is no longer in a safe and blessed place. If it had a little more sense, it would have that terrible stricken look you've seen on a child's face when it suddenly realizes it is separated and alone in a world of unknown faces. I never want to rush over and comfort anyone more than I do a child like that, whose face literally crumbles. The child didn't intend to get lost, only to have fun and a moment of glorious freedom, which is pretty much, Jesus says, the way it is with most people who are called lost. We don't go out deliberately into the night, most of us, with guns and clubs, having plotted how to rob a bank or burn a store or assault a secretary in a dimly lighted parking lot. What we do is live with our heads down, nibbling along happily from one rich little tuft of opportunity or privilege to another, paying no heed where we're headed, until one day it's suddenly clear to others, if not yet to ourselves, that we are lost, that we have cared only about ourselves until nobody else really cares about us. And the darkness is falling, and there may not be a soul left to miss us and watch for us from an open door. I'm not sure the story of the shepherd out hunting a single lost sheep is very logical. More sensible probably for the shepherd to say, well, 1 out of 100, that's not bad. I'll sit here on a stone and rejoice over the 99 who took care of themselves. But God, Paul reminds us, doesn't care much about our practical wisdom. His incredible concern about a single, silly, strayed sheep is amazing in the history of those world religions we studied recently. I think it's mostly in the Christian faith that God becomes the relentless hound of heaven who refuses to give up on anyone. This is not a story in which someone with a megaphone stands in a pulpit shouting at the lost sheep to come back or be burned in some final fire, or puts an ad in the paper and says contentedly, if they want to be found, let them find their way to us and we'll put their names on the church roll. No, the tone of these stories is very different from that. It represents a God so eager to rescue us that he seems not to want to give up on anyone. I found a paragraph the other day that seems to sum up perfectly the attitude Jesus took toward people in the name of God. It reads like this: when we are given our final assessment, I would prefer to be found to have erred on the side of grace rather than judgment, to have loved too much rather than too little, to have forgiven the undeserving rather than refused forgiveness to one who deserved it, to have fed a parasite rather than to have neglected one who was truly hungry, to have been taken advantage of rather than to have taken undue advantage, to have believed too much in people rather than too little, to have been wrong on the side of too much trust rather than too little, to have believed the best and been wrong than to have believed the worst and been right. I'm not sure that's a good common sense either, nor the logic by which one manages one's life in a practical world, but I am sure that it is the lopsided wisdom by which Jesus thought the kingdom of heaven might come to earth. So both stories, the one about a lost sheep and the one about a lost coin, really answer a single question: what is God like? It's the ultimate question for anyone with a speck of religious curiosity. And the answer is that God is like the shepherd, driven by love to gamble on the winning of one dumb sheep that without help will never find its way back. And so how is it that we are found, the ones of us drawn by that enticing clump of rich green grass and the bright bubbling spring until the night falls, and the hills have locked us in and we haven't the faintest idea which way is home. How are the ways by which God finds us? There are too many to name, but sometimes through meeting someone whose life shows us pasture and peace beyond anything we had ever thought possible. Sometimes through a surprising book that opens a window for us on landscapes undreamed of. Sometimes by a movie. I knew a boy for whom one of the early good cop movies called Serpico was a dramatic turning point. He'd gotten into a bad habit of stealing from places where he worked, even, he told me, sometimes even from his own parents. He had gone to Sunday school, he said, and heard 100 sermons, but by some miracle of chance, it was that film that made the difference, because on the night he saw it, sitting by himself, he was suddenly blinded by scalding tears of remorse. And he said that as he drove home, he emptied his pockets, threw the coins out a window, and literally screamed aloud his determination never to steal again. It was a moment, a genuine moment of conversion that did not happen in a church. The church has no monopoly on finding those who have nibbled themselves lost, and it would be a terrible mistake if it should think otherwise. It would be wonderful to think the church might become a home when people are found. Unfortunately, not even that always happens. And what about the missing money of my sermon title? Well, that story of a dime dropped or misplaced in someone's house is only told to double the thrust. If the sheep strayed through ignorance, the coin was lost by the carelessness of others. And we shall not share, you and I, the compassion of God until we remember that. The human coin rolls off, quite by accident sometimes, into a dark corner. The luckier ones among us had just as soon forget. The abused child who grows up to abuse others. The unloved child who never felt a father's hand stroking his head or heard his mother read a book at night and therefore has no notion of what it means to love someone lost. These children, not because they wish to be, but because of the mischance and accident of life. I thought of this on Friday when I read a story in the paper, the newspaper, about a study that rediscovered what ought to be obvious, that nothing does more to guarantee a happy, productive adult life than growing up in a home with warm and loving parents. The sad truth is that a child has no more control over this than the lost coin had over its own destiny in our story. If you were lucky, thank God. If you grew up believing in love and taught how to work and wait for the future to reward you, how else do you pay back the debt but by giving it in return to some other child? In this room are parents who have the chance right now to do that, and potential parents who will have it tomorrow, and the logic to live by is this: if you want the best chance for your child to grow up to be happy, sane, and sound, be a warm and loving parent. What the study I spoke of concluded is that whether you can afford the latest toys and then cars and college seems not to matter nearly so much as quality time and loving attention. Children from homes like that, the study finds, have a sense of joy in life and are sustained by a strong and abiding sense of their own worth. Dr. Spock, who preached this gospel for years, smiles, I am told, about the new study and says he feels vindicated at last. We might also remember that even in the church, which we are fond of calling a family, we sometimes lose our own through carelessness. We overlook the quiet ones. We do not make use of the gifts they offer hesitantly. We understandably rely on those who have said yes before, and so always there are a few who quietly drop into a corner and are lost. We shall do well in our search for people to help, not to miss the ones who are right under our noses. As for ourselves, we are sometimes the lost, no matter how often we go to church. And every time we feel the sting of conscience that this parable preaches, it speaks again its good news that we are worth the patient search of the eternal God Himself. What a thought.